Yeah, this, there's a lot of parables going on in here, all in one little section. Thanks, Mike, for the more lengthy reading. The first thing I want to start with, though, talking about messages, is this number here, 10,000. 10,000, that's the amount of adverts we see in one day. 10,000. That's how many adverts we are bombarded with every single day. 10,000 advertisements for something. Something to tell us to do, to buy something, to stay on some site, to go somewhere. You buy this thing, you'll get this thing. All sorts of promises are in those 10,000 things as well. Now, as we view these, probably mostly unconsciously, because how can we spend time actually sorting out these 10,000 things? Mostly unconsciously, we're sorting out what's worth listening to and what's not worth listening to. And we do this all the time. If we don't believe in something, we can say, I don't buy it. That's generally what we say, oh, I don't buy that thing. It's not worth my belief. It's also not worth whatever kind of extra cost you're asking me. Like, I don't want to pay for that thing. I just don't buy it. But sometimes, even in these 10,000 things every day, sometimes we do find something that is worth believing in. It is worth buying into. And that's also what we say. Like, I'll buy into that. It's an idea I buy into. We give ourselves to something. Now, Jesus today comes to us with a similar kind of message, but it's also completely different. The message of his kingdom. It's a way of life. It is a way of life, and there's lots of different ways of life, but it's different than every other kind of way of life that's out there. Jesus wants us to question what we bought into. Are the rewards worth the cost? Because everything has a cost. And are they, first of all, is that reward real? And if it is real, is it actually worth that cost? We all buy into something. We should really make sure the reward is worth it. Now, without Jesus, we all inevitably buy into something that is not worth it. It's just not good enough. We end up selling ourselves short, settling for some really low common denominator, low status quo kind of life. And in the end, nothing remains but ash. But Jesus offers us something better. A life where we can rest, a life where we can be honest with ourselves, a life where we can be a small part of something really big. And in the end, we get to enjoy even more of it. It actually doesn't end in our end. We get to enjoy more of it. It doesn't blow away in the breeze. It's permanent. See, Jesus wants us to enjoy life in his kingdom right now and in the future. And he describes his way in this section here using a bunch of different parables. And we're going to look at five of them: the weeds and the wheat, the mustard seed, the yeast, the hidden treasure, and the pearl. This is where we're going. You don't even have to listen to the rest of the sermon after this. Here's the three main points that we're going to be talking about. The three main things we're going to learn from Jesus in these parables, and there's loads of things, but it's what we're going to focus on today. The first is God is in control. The second is that small things are significant. And the third is that it's worth being all in. So God is in control, small things are significant, and it's worth being all in. So let's look at that first one, that God is in control. One of the first things that we should learn from the way that Jesus talks about this way of life, what it means to be in God's kingdom, is that he's in control. And for us as humans, it's actually a really good thing for us to rest into. We're going to look mostly at the weeds and the wheat for this one. So in the parable of the weeds and the wheat, it's different than last week, where the field was someone's heart. Here, the field is the world, the entire world. In the field, there are good plants from good seed and bad plants from bad seed. There's wheat and there's weeds. In this field, the owner plants the wheat, the good seed. And at some point, an enemy comes along and throws a bunch of other seeds, a bunch of bad seeds in there. That's where we get the term bad seed from. A bunch of bad seeds in there. And actually, that was a way that if you were an army attacking some other nation, you would do that. If you're a neighbor that really didn't like your neighbor, that's something else you'd do too. It's a way to kind of get at them. You just destroy the crop by throwing in a bunch of bad seeds. Now, back then, that would happen, and actually there were all sorts of laws of if someone did that to you, here's the kind of recourse you can take. If that happened to you, and you had a bunch of bad seed in your field, you might be tempted to rip it all up, like the servants were. Let's rip it all up and start over again. But the owner in this parable says, no, let them both grow, let them both flourish, and when it's time for harvest, that's when we'll separate the two. The wheat will be gathered in, the weeds are going to be burned. Now notice in this one, there's two types of seed. This is different than another parable we've heard before. There's two types of seed. In the mixed world that we live in, where some follow in God's way and others don't, there is a division, and we know this from our own experience. In this divided world, both plants grow, and we know this in our experience as well. There are times when those who don't follow Jesus do prosper. There are times when people who are wicked do prosper. The timing of when the weeds are dealt with, it's not in our hands. They are in God's hands. And at harvest, at the end of days, the weeds will be pulled up and burned, and the wheat will be gathered in with him. Now, we don't have control over that timing, and that can be really frustrating because sometimes we want God to harvest right now, change everything right now. Other times, we don't want God to ever do that. We don't want, like, please never harvest anything, God, because that sounds really scary. What that does mean, though, is for those who are in God's kingdom, our first call is to patience. If you notice, the servants, they're working, but they're working on the orders of the owner. They're not working first and then asking questions later. They're asking questions first, being patient on the owner to tell them what to do. If God is in control, and as a Christian, we would say, yes, I believe God's in control. We say we believe that. That means that we're not. That's a lot more difficult to believe. We work, yes, like the servants in the field. They're working, but they're waiting on God. And that's a different kind of work. Throughout the Gospels, the disciples, they're impatient with Jesus. They're impatient that he's not doing the thing they wanted to do, which is to overturn the injustices of this Roman government, this oppressive government that's like destroying us, it's grounding our people into poverty. Jesus, why aren't you doing something right now? They want to see all of these things put right. And in our time, it's pretty similar. We might get anxious about our own government or in other governments. We might be overwhelmed by the evil that does seem to prosper. We might be frustrated in the slow work of his kingdom. And we're just like the disciples when we demand Jesus to overturn the world right now. And the reason we are like this is because we don't really trust him. That's why we're like that. We don't really trust him. To be patient means to trust him, that he's in control and that he actually knows what he's doing. You can't trust what you don't know. If we know him, we know he is more wise, more loving, more powerful than we could imagine. And if that's who is in control, if that kind of God, if the God who says what he is like this and here, if that's who he really is and that's who's in control, then that makes it a lot easier to be patient because then we can trust him. It's important for us to be patient. If we're patient with the world, we will truly be able to be in the world but not of it. And that is how Jesus tells us to live, to be in the world but not of the world. If we are impatient with the world, we're going to create barriers and we won't be of the world, but we also won't be in it either. If we're patient with ourselves, that means we wait on God to do his work in our hearts instead of trying to manufacture something going on instead. And that doesn't work, by the way, us trying to get ourselves, you know, perfect. So instead of being frustrated when that doesn't happen, which will happen all the time, we will get frustrated. Instead of being frustrated at that, we can rest in him and his timing because we know who he is and he's going to do that work in our hearts. If we have that same kind of patience with other people, we can extend grace in ways that are impossible otherwise. We can have wide open front door of welcome for anyone to come in, for anyone to hear about his kingdom, to actually really invite people into that, and welcome people into that, while also being clear what it means to be in that kingdom. Patience for Christians is very important. But of course we know, it's not easy. If only it were easy, we probably wouldn't even be reading about it right now. We're always going to be tempted to shortcut this. It's true in Jesus' time, definitely true in our time. And our world is an everything now kind of world. It's an easier life. It's an easier life not living with weeds. But that's just not the world that Jesus calls us into. But let's talk about the weeds for a moment. The weeds are the work of the enemy. There is a powerful evil force out there to ruin us, to frustrate us. All the good things that God has in this world, he wants to destroy it. Those weeds and our wheat can be wars, starvation, child abuse. Can also be loneliness, difficulties in relationships, frustrations in your career. It can also be something more simple like a stubbed toe or just bad coffee. Oh man, that's a weed. And maybe actually the biggest injustice, the way that Jesus and especially the Old Testament prophets talked about, the biggest injustice are people not in God's kingdom, missing out. And not people somewhere else, people here. If you've ever worked in a restaurant, if you say you're in the weeds, that's not a good situation. You're frustrated, you're behind, you need to catch up. Things aren't great, you're kind of frazzled a little bit. See, the weeds are everywhere. Jesus says, this is the work of the enemy, the evil one, Satan himself. There is a powerful spiritual force out there who is trying to frustrate God's work, trying to ruin it for you. We are all in the weeds, every single one of us. And for those who are in God's kingdom, we, in the end, we won't be burned up. Jesus says we're going to shine like the sun. That's a very interesting phrase because that's also how Jesus is described in his second return at the end of time. He'll become shining like the sun. That's where we are going with him. Now, I don't care what you feel or think you know, where you are now. If you are with Jesus, if you are with him, you will be like him. You will be with him. And not because you're good at it, because he is. There is a day where you will shine like the sun, not because you're great, but because he is, and that's where we are. We're with him. It's actually going to happen. That's what happens to people who are with Jesus. But when you're in the weeds, you can get desperate. I can get desperate. Will it always be like this? Where's the relief? When are things going to change? These are the prayers, these are the cries that we lift up, and we lift them up to God, because in God's kingdom, we learn here that, no, it's not always going to be like this. Who knows when the change will be? We don't know. But we know it won't always be like this. One day the sun will rise and we will shine with it. We can trust in God for his timing, and we can also trust in God for his justice. That doesn't mean we don't work for it now, because like the servants, we work. We join his kingdom. We work now. We push back the darkness. We do things like put on a community arts show, put on Christmas carol services, light switch on. We're interacting with people who we wouldn't normally interact with. These are all opportunities to invite people to know God and to be part of his kingdom. But we do that all the while knowing that God one day will set things right. And it is his kingdom after all, right? Let's not trick ourselves into thinking that it's our kingdom. Jesus says it's his kingdom in verse 41. He says, the Son of Man will send out his angels and they'll weed out his kingdom. And then in verse 43, it says, the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their father. It's Jesus' kingdom and the father's kingdom at the same. By the way, is another time where Jesus is calling himself God. So this is the message of God's kingdom, a massive contrast with the world. The world says you are in control. Maybe there's a God, maybe not, but really ultimately, you're the one who's in control. You have all the power, you have all you need, you are enough. And if you're not, well, that's your fault for not recognizing it. Got to dig deeper. Being told you are enough, I think, is supposed to be comforting, but really it's a weight that we have to drag around with us. If we are enough and there are no other options, then what do I do when I'm overwhelmed? What about like when intrusive thoughts come in? What about when I sin and make mistakes and hurt other people? The more I think about how I'm supposed to be enough, I realize I'm really not. But the glorious good news of the gospel is that we really can be honest with who we are. We don't have to have it all together. We don't have to be enough in ourselves. We are made with a built-in inadequacy, which is meant to lead us to God, which is meant to experience all the good things that Jesus is promising us here, to lead us to love, so that we can rest in his control instead of having to drum it all up for ourselves. We can rest in his timing. We can rest in his justice. In our world, in ourselves, and with other people, all of our emptiness gets to be filled with God. So God is in control. The next thing that we'll look at is how Jesus teaches us that small things are significant. And this is mostly about the mustard seed and the yeast. Now, we've already talked about taking time and being patient. And that is true whether a tree grows or whether you're baking bread. Both of those things, you work for it, yeah, but most of it's just waiting. For a tree to grow, for bread to bake, it's mostly just waiting. And in that waiting, it's the small things that can be significant. That's a mustard seed. Look how small that thing is. You can see the person's fingerprint, so it has to zoom in so close. And that's a mustard tree, the size of how it can look like. Here's a little bit of yeast. If you've ever I don't know if you got into it over lockdown. I was one of those guys who talked about baking bread and did sourdough and all that kind of stuff. I know those 7-gram yeast packets. They're small. But then you can make a massive loaf of bread, and that's not actual bread. But that would be great if it was. Wouldn't that be great if that was actual bread? So great things can come from small beginnings. And we've seen in the past how Jesus talks about the resistance towards his kingdom. It's a powerful thing. What will overcome the darkness in our world? Small little seed. A little bit of yeast. Only a powerful God would use something so small to do something so big. Now, Jesus kind of exaggerates the results a little bit here. A mustard tree can be tall, but not really much higher than 2 meters. And a loaf of bread with like 30 kilograms of flour, that would like feed an entire village. There's no oven that would actually fit something like that. But I think Jesus is teaching something here, even in the actual exaggeration. He's saying, my kingdom affects this world in a way that is not even possible naturally. This is like a supernatural affect that my kingdom brings. It's beyond what is naturally possible. With Jesus, it is possible. And notice too, for a seed, you don't just leave it on the surface. You have to plant it. You have to put it underneath. For yeast, you have to, it says mix in, literally in the Greek, to mix seed is to hide it. You have to hide the yeast in the dough, underground, in the dough, eventually becoming something big. Something that's seemingly insignificant, that small little bit of yeast. A small seed becomes a tree, becomes baked bread. Where there is yeast in dough, it will rise. Where there is a seed that's planted well, A tree is going to grow. That's not an if. This is going to happen. And this is what we as the church, as part of the God's kingdom, get to be a part of. Be it small or large, God's kingdom is always significant. Now, if you plant a tree, and I've never actually planted a tree, but I'm sure I've planted things in the past, you don't get disheartened by the size of the seed. That's not like a depressing thing. Oh, it's so small. It's probably never become something. If you've ever baked bread, you're not disappointed by just using 7 grams of yeast. This is so small. I can't believe this is actually going to do anything. No, you know it's going to do the job. And if it's not there, the job won't be done. No seed, no tree. No yeast, no bread. Or at least no rise. It's not just nice. It's necessary. It has to be there. It's small and significant. And this is how the global Christian movement started. 12 followers of Jesus who were not enough in themselves, were kind of didn't get it, definitely really scared. They started this revolution. And this revolution has not ended. It's still going on now. There are more Christians now, not just in number because there's more people now, but more Christians in percentage globally than there ever have been. That's kind of crazy to think about. That's not something that we think about very often because it's not our direct context, but that is the global context. Percentage-wise, more Christians than there ever has been. See, a mustard seed doesn't look to itself. It looks to what it's going to be. We're called a church plant for a reason. We're still kind of growing. We're still trying to be something. And from this seed, something bigger will grow. Not because we're great, but because it's God who's at work. And I hope this is an encouragement to you if you are a Christian. When you feel small, surely you felt like that. I know I have. When you believe yourself insignificant, I feel like that most of the time. What am I even doing? What am I even spending my time doing? Does anyone actually really care? Jesus is saying, in my kingdom, you matter. It's not just nice that you're here. It's not like, oh, I'm going to give them a little, like throw them a bone and give them this little church thing or have them be part of this kingdom. It's not just nice that we're here. It's necessary that we're here. We are significant, and God has a role for us to play. God has a role for you to play. This little church called Redeemer, we have a role to play in this ongoing global revolution of God's love. We're a small packet of yeast. Yes, we are. And in God's kingdom, we are significant. Now, this is not what we hear from the world. In the world, you can either be small or significant. You can't be both. You can't be both. Our world of consumerism, where bigger and faster is always better, despises small things. One must always make a name for oneself. He was always proved to others that we know things, that we do good things, that we have passions and hobbies, and we care about the right causes and all the kind of stuff. Not only do those things, but also let other people know that we're doing those things too, because if other people don't know, then what's the point? I don't feel significant anymore. The relentless pursuit of significance is just that. It is relentless. You have to keep it going all the time. You can't rest there. You got to keep moving. And not only that, showing others that you're going after it as well. Now, here's a tragic thing. In our search for significance, if we search for that first, search for like meaning and something that matters, in our search for significance, we've lost it. We become insignificant. If we seek significance first, we miss it. But if we seek him, we seek God, we get all of him and all the rest of stuff, and also we get significance thrown in. It's like buy one, get one. Like, it's great. Everyone loves that. Who doesn't love that? It's a meal deal. What hope can a mustard seed have? By itself, doesn't really do very much. But in the right hands, it can be something of consequence. And I'm telling you, we have no idea what God's plans are for our church. We never thought we'd be in a school. That's a small thing, right? You have no idea what God's plans are in your life. You have no idea. But God does. He's in control. Small things are significant. And lastly, in God's kingdom, it's worth being all in. These last two parables we're going to look at, the hidden treasure and the pearl, these are verses 44 and 46. They're really short, but there's a lot going in on them. This is the part in the film where the characters are around, they're playing poker. It's like, you know, people are kind of grizzled, staring at each other, maybe cigars and sunglasses and stuff. And this one guy, the one character, pushes all his chips in, and he goes all in. And if he has the right cards, he gets all the money. If he doesn't have the right cards, then he doesn't get all the money. That's what's going on here. That's what all in means. There's a cost. That's like literally part of the term, being all in. And that's what these parables demonstrate. All the chips in the center, all in. Yes, there's a cost, but it's a small cost compared to the reward. A reward is only worth it if it's greater than the cost. And a reward that's only like marginally more like worth it, that's not even worth even really paying for. It has to be something that's really worth it. And there are two parables about that. The hidden treasure It is so great, it's worth selling everything to get the field with the treasure in it. The pearl is of such a high value, it's worth selling everything to get it. Unlike the weeds and the wheat, that's about like future reward, this is immediate. They're going to be experiencing these rewards right now. Leaving one way of life for another means immediately being able to embrace the goodness of this new life. It's something that we get now. Now, being all in means selling everything else, emptying ourselves of ourselves, leaving what we think, how we ought to live over here, and embracing this other way of life that Jesus calls us to live. It's different. It's a different way of life. That should not be surprising. We have a new way to live. This pearl, a new way of being, means a new way of acting, a new way of working out in this world. And that can be really disruptive. The reason why it's disruptive for us is because even though we want to be over here, especially if you're a Christian, we can't help but be pulled back into that old life. That's why it's so disruptive. It's not because the new life is bad, it's because the old life is bad and we keep on getting pulled back to it. That's where the disruption is. But Jesus tells us to be all in. Jesus wants us to get the whole reward. It's worth it. Now, this is something that we do all the time in other places. If you work, we trade our hours and our energy for a salary. We think that's a worthwhile trade. Sometimes you might doubt that when work isn't going super great. If you buy a house, same kind of thing. I'm going to buy a house now, and in some year's time, I assume it's probably going to be worth it. If you have children, there's a cost, right? And sometimes you'll be like, it's worth the reward, it's worth the reward, it's worth the reward, right? Of course it's worth it, though. It's worth the cost. In all of these things, and those are all significant things. Those are all good things, significant things. But in all those things, the difference between the cost and the reward is minuscule compared to the cost and the reward that what Jesus is offering us here. If I had a 100-pound note and I'd say, give me a pound coin and this one's yours, you'd be stupid to not do that. You'd probably be like, what's the deal here? Like, there's some kind of thing going, this is too good to be true. See, the cost is for us to leave our old life, something that isn't working anyway, by the way, and we get a new life, something that it works perfectly. It's where we get forgiveness, where we get rest, where we get significance, where we can rest with him being in control. We get all of that and a whole lot more. The difference between the cost and the reward for us in Jesus' kingdom is not just finite, it's not even just big, it's infinite. It's infinite. We'd be fools to see the kingdom for what it is and not be all in. Now, this is different from the world, because the world does not encourage us to be all in with Jesus' kingdom, and that is like maybe the most obvious thing I've ever said in a sermon ever. The world tells us, always hedge your bets. Always hedge your bets. Whatever the thing is, always hedge your bets. Always be suspicious slightly. Always doubt enough. Don't show much enthusiasm for anything, and please, especially not with your faith. Don't be super happy about it. Always hedging your bets means never enjoying a reward fully, because there's part of you that's holding back a little bit. You have to hold yourself back. Don't get too involved. Don't really serve. Don't really give. All those things. When we hedge our bets with God, we don't get to be all in. And we miss out on the joy of his reward. How are we going to not just sell everything we have, but if you noticed, the man who bought the field in his joy went and sold everything? To joyfully sell everything you have means you really understand that that reward is much better. That sounds a bit too enthusiastic. I don't know. If you had to sell everything that you had to get a winning lottery ticket, I think you joyfully would sell everything you have to get the winning lottery ticket. That's the kind of thing that's going on here. Being all in with God allows us to fully enjoy his reward. Being halfway in is just another way of saying not in. Jesus doesn't give us that option. And then when we're like in that halfway mode, which is just not being in, we miss out on all that he has for us. The reward is God himself. See, God has always been all in for us. He's never held himself back, always been all in. And we get all of him. Never settle for anything less than God himself in your life. You're worth too much to do that. Never settle for that. So we've looked kind of briefly at some of what Jesus teaches us in these parables about God's kingdom. And really, each one of these could be a whole sermon in itself. And surely that's probably how Jesus even used it in his public ministry. But we also looked on how that contrasted with the way that the world tells us to live. God's kingdom means we aren't in control of everything all the time, which is actually good. We're free to not always have to be enough all the time. It means even in our smallness, we're significant. It means we get a reward of infinite value, so amazing that we're happy to sell everything to get it. We are much better off in God's kingdom, and yet some will miss out. Let's go back to the weeds and the wheat, because it's not just about people who are in, it's also people who decide not to be in. The weeds are everything in this world that works against the goodness of this world. That's true. But really, if we look at it closely, what the weeds are people. They're people who don't want to be in God's kingdom. There's wheat and there are weeds. Those who refuse God's kingdom will ultimately get what they want, to not be in God's kingdom. And the end, according to Jesus, is a blazing furnace, weeping, gnashing of teeth. This is hell, eternal separation from God's love. Now, we all want injustice to end. We all want bad things to not be bad. But really, if we're honest with ourselves, we know that there is injustice in our own hearts as well. And we know we brought bad things into this world. God knows way more that we brought into this world. In wanting this world to be a better place, we should realize we are part of the problem. We've contributed to the problem. If we want God to wipe the slate clean, we must be swept up with it. So how can we be part of the solution? The famous author, he's a Russian author and survived the Gulag and all sorts of things. Has a crazy kind of life. Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote, and I did practice pronouncing that last name, by the way. Talking about the difference of people who are against each other. And sometimes it's easy to say, here are the baddies, here are the goodies. Politically, here are the baddies, here are the goodies. Morally, here's the baddies, here's the goodies. But what thing that he wrote, and this is a guy who survived some pretty horrible stuff from the government itself, said the line dividing good and evil doesn't just cut through groups of humans, it cuts through the heart of every human being. Like, it's in us. All of us are caught up in the sin that we despise. Later on in Jesus' life, in Matthew, we'll read that he dies on a cross. And this is something that is beyond a mere symbol. The cross isn't a symbol of God's love. It's where something actually happened. An action actually happened at the cross. What happened on the cross is Jesus took all of our injustices, all of our sin, all of our weediness that we have inside of us with him. And if you follow him, everything bad we've done, all of our sin, as he dies, it dies with him. With his resurrection, he gives his followers a new life, this amazing reward that we've been talking about. Like yeast in dough, we get to rise as he does. It's at the cross where Jesus takes our cost. There was a cost that we deserve for being part of that injustice, part of our sin. The cost of our sin is to not be with him, to be eternally separated from him forever. The cost of our sin, where we deserve justice to be poured out on us, it was poured out on him. And we get his reward in his resurrection. Without the cross, we remain the weeds. And then eventually we become ash. With the cross, we shine like the sun because we're with Jesus. And one day the sun will rise and we will shine with it. And this is what we get to celebrate with the Lord's Supper. We celebrate Jesus taking our cost on himself, him giving us his reward. His body broken and destroyed means our lives are made whole. His cup of justice, of wrath that we deserve, what we get to drink is not wrath, is not justice, is not punishment, is new life. Now, if you're not yet a Christian, this is not something for you to join in with yet. Until you leave that old life and run to his new one, thanks very much, please don't do something with your body that you don't actually believe in with your heart. But surely this is something to think about. What message is worth believing in? What message is worth giving our lives to? We give our lives to something. Surely it should be worth it. We have only one life to live. Let's make it worth it. If you are a Christian, we will eat and drink in a moment, but consider this if you're a Christian. How are you all in? What are some of the chips you want to keep for yourself instead of pushing them all into the middle of the table? How are you patient? How can you trust in the small things that God has given? And maybe this is the biggest thing. Do you really enjoy his reward? Do you really see it as good? Do you really like enjoy it? If not, you're really missing something. And to Christians, one last thing before we move on. Towards the end of this chapter, in verses 51 and 52, Jesus talks to the disciples as he explains the weeds and the wheat, and he says, do you understand this? And they say, yes, we understand this. And then he says, oh, that's really good. Now, don't hide it, bring it out. If you understand this, do not hide it, bring it out. That's what he tells the disciples, that's what he tells us. If you understand what Jesus has said today, and if this is somebody who you follow, we can't hide it, we have to bring it out. To hide it is a way of not being all in. And we just don't really have that option. So let's enjoy it. And let's bring it out together. So if you do follow Jesus, the way for representation